Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
We are not good.
What?
We are not good, Chef.
No?
What's better than this? Guys being dudes.
The Athletic presents Hogan Johns.
We're in another corner!
Why the do I watch this team?
One of the local writers, Adam Hoagie, or Hog, excuse me, I don't know how to pronounce the last name.
From CHGO, it's Adam Hoag.
Hey, George.
Hi, Adam.
And from The Athletic, it's Adam Johns.
Adam Johns, go ahead.
Hey, Matt, how you doing?
Coach Ditka versus the Hurricane, who would win?
Ditka. Ditka.
Hold on. The name of the Hurricane is Hurricane Ditka.
Here they are. Hogan Johns.
What's up? Welcome in, Hogan and Johns with you. Less than 3 weeks now to the NFL draft. Johnsy is still on vacation, southeastward, as he told everybody last week, somewhere in the southeast. But we still want to get you an episode this week, and we got a fun one for you as our friend Josh Lucas joins the show once again. And this time, we're going to lean heavily into Josh's draft prep and talk about his top 10 players in this year's class, which is very relevant to the Bears, obviously, who have two top 9 picks. So really excited to have Josh back on the show. How's it going?
It is going well. Going through this exercise, it's as deep of a first round as I can remember in a while. And we'll get to that as we hit on the top 10 and then talk about some guys that I didn't put in my top 10, but could easily be in anyone else's top 10. There's a lot of good players that are going to get taken in the first round.
Well, make sure you are following us on Twitter at Hogan Johns is our show account, HoganJohns.com for all of our merch and all that good stuff. You can follow me at Adam Hogue and Johnsy at Adam Johns. But I don't want to waste any time. Let's jump into this. Before we get to your specific players, there's a few topics we wanted to discuss kind of leading into this process. And I know one thing you wanted to talk about was just sort of how everyone has a top 10, you know, whether it's me, you, teams. So touch on that for a second, just kind of setting up what we're actually going to do on this show today.
Tell me how many top 10s there are in the country between GMs, individual scouts, the talking heads, the guru Kuypers, and whoever else. And we already know every single one of them is wrong. In 4 years from now, I will promise you, the top 10 players from the 2024 class will not be the top 10 players that are taken or the top 10 players that are on anyone's top 10 list. You know, a lot of that is obviously the push up of the quarterbacks. And we know at least two of those guys are going to fail, maybe three of them, maybe only one of them. It's illustrated easily in so many ways that I would love to touch on. Just look at what just happened in free agency. You look at the top 10 players who got paid in free agency this spring. It's Kirk Cousins, Chris Jones, Brian Burns, Christian Wilkins, Robert Hunt, Baker Mayfield, Justin Matabuke, Jalen Johnson, Legarius Sneed, Jonah Jackson. Three of those players were taken in the first round.
Not even top 10, just first round.
First round. Yeah. One was taken in the top 10, and that's Baker Mayfield. And you could argue that the reason he's on that list is because he plays a premium position, and he's not a top 10 player from that class. There is caveat to that. Obviously, first round picks, guys that go in the top 10 that are really good, get extensions. You know, they're not a part of the salary dump that we just saw guy like Montez Sweat obviously got paid back in, you know, in season by the Bears. But it just goes to show you when you look at each year who's getting this big money, you know, it's all the way down. Legarius Sneed, fourth round pick. You know, the next guy on the list, I believe, was Jonah Jackson, who was, you know, I believe a third round pick. You know, Chris Jones was the second round pick. He's the best player at his position in football. And another guy who I think is absolutely dominant that ended up getting franchised and signed by his team, Justin Matabuke, you know, wasn't anywhere near the first round. So we all know in 4 years from now, you know, the top 10 players will not all come from the first round. This is why it is imperative to have a strong scouting staff, because there's gems, there's gold in every round. You know, just a quick touch on the Kansas. Just look at the Kansas City Chiefs. This is a dynasty. This is a true dynasty. You know, obviously Hall of Fame head coach, Hall of Fame quarterback, maybe the best to ever do it. That's the big part of the formula. But you look at their players that are going to wear gold jackets. Tyreek Hill, obviously not there anymore with Miami, but was a big part of the start of that dynasty. Fifth round pick. Obviously, there was character concerns that pushed him down that far. But I don't know that anyone would have saw him based on the school he was coming out of in that tape as a first round pick that year either way. Chris Jones is going to be a Hall of Famer, second round pick. Travis Kelce is going to be a Hall of Famer. Was not a first round pick. You just go to the guy they just lost. You know, their best DB, Legarius Sneed.
Yeah.
Basically got the exact same deal that Jalen Johnson just signed. Fourth round pick. You know, these organizations that stack these rosters can find them all over the board. It's not just coming from the top two rounds or necessarily the, you know, the top half of the first round. San Francisco, another great example of Debo, second round, Kittle in the fifth round. Like, it's, you got to have a strong staff, and you got to have conviction on guys, not only in the first round, but all the way down, you know, to the late rounds. And to me, usually the top five rounds, you can find special players. If you have a strong staff that isn't full of a bunch of scouts, is full of a bunch of evaluators. And there's a big difference between a scout and an evaluator. So it's imperative to be good throughout your personnel department to make sure you're finding guys that are capable of being difference makers, you know, all over the board.
Well, and I think even, you know, Patrick Mahomes obviously was a first round pick, but I think even that proves your point, because he wasn't like Caleb Williams is just this year, you know, the slam dunk, number one overall pick, easy selection. That was as bold of a move as you can make within the first round for a quarterback, to move up the way the Chiefs did, and have conviction on him and go make that move. So even in that case, with the one first rounder who will be a Hall of Famer too on that team, like, I still think that is proving your point too, and just the moves that the Chiefs have made.
There's two teams in the NFL that I know had conviction and love to draft Patrick Mahomes in the first round. The other 29 teams, if they told you they loved him, they're full of shit. There's two teams I know of. Obviously, the Chiefs were one of them. And there was another team that I think was more than ready to draft him and be the successor to the current Hall of Fame quarterback they had. Looking back at draft classes, 2019 draft class, I picked a good draft class. I could go through and cherry pick some bad draft classes that have very few stud players in the first round. There's been some bad ones. I went to 2019, which, if you look at it overall, was a strong class. But if you look at the players that were taken in the top 10 of that class. To me, there's only three of them that I would consider top 10 players from the 2019 class. Quinnen Williams, Nick Bosa, and Ed Oliver. I would say you could make an argument if you're debating, and obviously everyone's going to have a different list and a different opinion on you know, who's the top 10 players from 2019. But to me, three of the top 10 players could be on that list. And just to note, they're all pass rushers. Draft pass rushers.
So, okay, this is not where we were going with this, but I went on a rant on CHGO the other day about all these mock drafts that are saying there's going to be four quarterbacks and three wide receivers taken like before the Bears pick at nine. And I'm just like, that's not how the NFL works. Teams want offensive tackles and pass rushers.
Draft pass rushers.
So do you think that that's how this will ultimately, do you think that there'll be, because we all know the other part about this too, is we all know that the top 10 never plays out the way we think. Like maybe the first couple picks do, and then someone makes a big trade and, you know, all hell breaks loose. Don't I just think like based on history, as much as we might love these wide receivers, it's rare to see three wide receivers go on a run in the top 10. It usually happens after that. Yes, quarterbacks get pushed up, but someone's going to come up for a pass rusher or an offensive tackle that they have conviction on, even if the rest of us don't think that guy is a top 10 pick.
Yeah, I think only two receivers are going to go in the top 10 because of what you just said. Not that there's not three deserving.
Right.
You know, there's, to me, there's four top 10 worthy receivers in this draft. One won't come close to it because of some off-field makeup concerns that teams have, but I agree with you. I think someone's going to come up and or not come up. Someone's just going to take, you know, one of these guys because there's some good pass rushers in this draft, and you need them. And I get the quarterback thing. You can't play without a quarterback, and these guys are going to get pushed way too far up. You know, if those four guys go in the top four, they're not even close to the top four players in this class. But going back to 19, you know, if you look at the rest of that first round in 19, I would make an argument that if I was saying the 10 best players from that class from the first round right now, the three I mentioned that went top 10, Bosa, Quinnen Williams, Ed Oliver. Mm-hmm. My next seven would be Rashawn Gary, pass rusher, Christian Wilkins, pass rusher, Chris Lindstrom, protects the passer, Brian Burns, pass rusher, Jeffrey Simmons, pass rusher, Dexter Lawrence, defensive lineman that can do a little bit of both, stop the run, and he can generate pressure, and Montez Sweat, pass rusher. Not a surprise that in my opinion, that would be my top 10 from that class. There's a ton of misses in that class on the offensive line. But if you look, I would say those are my top 10. And obviously, they all didn't go in the top 10. But here's my point. There's guys from the 2019 class that I would absolutely have in my top 10 over some of those guys we just mentioned. Debo Samuel did not go in the first round. AJ Brown didn't go in the first round. You can make an argument for DK Metcalf. Mm-hmm. Some would, some wouldn't. And then to me, Max Crosby absolutely is in the top 10 players of that class. And he was a fourth round pick. He's also a pass rusher, by the way.
Yes.
If you haven't noticed the theme. So,
sorry, but my first reaction to all this is it sucks the Bears didn't have a pick in the first two rounds.
Absolutely.
There was is this really the year the Bears, you guys took David Montgomery in the third?
Yeah, and we didn't have a second round pick either. This is a good draft class, and I'm showing you plenty of examples of guys outside of the first round that would be considered top 10 players from that 2019 class. You know, at one point in time, you know, I thought Elgton Jenkins from Green Bay would be heading in that direction. His first 2 years in Green Bay, you know, when we were in Chicago, we were like, shit, they got a guy. He can play guard. He can play tackle. Injuries have slowed him down a bit. I believe he's still a top five paid offensive guard in the league. You look at the 10 linemen went before him. Six linemen went in the first round. And there is only one of those 10 that you could say is as good or better than him, and that's Chris Lindstrom. The misses at offensive line in that draft pick, in that draft class, it's pretty staggering when you go from the first guy taken down to the 11th guy taken. It's way more misses than hits. Another example, let's hop to 2020, Jalen Johnson.
Yep.
Jalen Johnson was, I believe, the 7th corner taken in the draft.
Let's see. You had Akuda. You had C.J. Henderson.
I got him right here. Akuda, yeah. Henderson, A.J. Terrell, Damon Arnett, Noah Igbinoghe, the guy from Auburn, and Jeff Gladney. Think about that.
Yeah.
Akuda is a fringe starter, not even with original drafting team. C.J. Henderson is with Akuda in Houston. He's a backup. A.J. Terrell was a hit, very good player, good pick by Atlanta. Damon Arnett is out of the league. Noah Igbinoghe, sorry for the pronunciation, he's now on his third team. He's a backup. But it just shows you, Jalen was the 7th guy taken. You look at the rest of that draft, you know, guys not taken in the first round. Jalen Hurts, people could argue, a top 10 player in that class. We just talked about Jalen. T. Higgins, Antoine Winfield Jr., Matt Ibuka, we talked about, third round. Obviously, Snead, fourth round. Trayvon Diggs went right after Jalen.
Did you say Cole Kmet already too?
Jonathan Taylor. I wouldn't consider Cole Kmet a top 10 player from that class. Okay. Love Cole. But wouldn't put him in there. These are all names I think people could make arguments for.
Mm-hmm.
Antoine Winfield Jr., I think I said. And then the one that, you know, the biggest surprise, 6th-round pick, you know, Mike, you know, Onwenu, the big, heavy, you know, Michigan offensive lineman that just signed a new deal and has played well in the league. Probably not a top 10 player, you know, in the class, but you're talking about a 6th-round player that just got paid really well. And every draft class has these examples. And it's just, like I said to begin the conversation, I can tell you your top 10 list is not going to be right.
All right. Well, I don't know if that's the best way to set this up, but especially as the Bears have 2 top 9 picks, they don't have another pick until 75. So I don't know if the, you know, it, that's a real thing, though, as the Bears go into this draft, is like they have to hit on these 2 picks in the top 9 because we see it all the time, especially in the second. I love the set. The second round might be my favorite round in the draft, to be honest with you, Josh. Like every year, I just feel like, rightly so, all this emphasis goes on Thursday night and how much fun the draft is and, you know, get through the first round. But I know, and you probably have a lot of stories, the second that first round's over, the second you guys know you're done for the night on Thursday, I mean, you're getting right back in that room and saying, all right, who's left here? Because you know that those picks in the second round, many of those guys can turn into all pros if you hit them.
Absolutely. I mean, all the way down, my favorite round's the 5th round.
You guys had a lot of success in the 5th round.
We drafted my very first year as a scout, a guy from my area, in the 5th round that would have been a Hall of Famer if he didn't have the toe deal. Well, Carl Nix, we took in the 5th round out of Nebraska. Obviously, character concerns pushed him down. I personally thought he was the most talented offensive lineman in the entire draft. We got him in the 5th round. People don't realize Carl Nix was two-time first-team All-Pro in the first 4 years of his career, and he didn't start his rookie year. So you look at guys that make the Pro Football Hall of Fame, they have two first-team All-Pros and a handful of Pro Bowls. You're getting in. He signed the biggest deal in league history for a guard, and then had the staph infection right away in Tampa, and unfortunately – his career was cut short. Obviously, we took Kenny Stills in the fifth round in our time in New Orleans. We took the punter, Morstead, in the fifth round, still playing. And then, obviously, here in Chicago, we drafted a bunch. And this new regime hit on their very first fifth-round pick in Braxton Jones, who's a you know, functional starting left tackle. You get a functional starting left tackle in the fifth round. That is a grand slam, you know. So to me, it always the board. Once you get to sixth and seventh round, now you're talking more college free agents. Obviously, Brady came out of the sixth round. I think Khalil Herbert was probably our best sixth round pick. So you can still find some guys, but you're exactly right. As soon as the first round ends, you know when you're picking that next day. You're staying in the room that night. You're there till about midnight. You draw that line. All right, we're the sixth pick. Let's put the six guys in order. Is there anyone here in this six that is just we're so convicted on that we're willing to move up and make sure we get them? Or do we have trust in the process that these six guys are all guys that can help us and we can just stay put? Or is there 12 names that you really like? And hey, we get phone calls. Let's move back and acquire picks. So that's a fun night. You're exactly right. And it's nice that the draft on day two starts later in the day. Cause you're at the building till 1 AM trying to set everything up and then, you know, go home, get rest and get ready for day two. So
all right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, let's jump into this top 10 then. Before we do that, though, I want to pay off one tease of something you said earlier because it is actually, I believe it's, if I got the team right, it is public knowledge. But the other team that was going to draft Patrick Mahomes was the New Orleans Saints, correct?
Yes.
Because Sean Payton actually came out and told the story, I think, on like a year or two ago or something like that. But so that was the one team that you were talking about earlier that you believe was legitimately going to get Mahomes if the Chiefs didn't. And where were they? I'm trying to think of where they were picking that year.
Not far. They weren't far off. They were right there. That was the 17 draft, obviously. I have it right in front of me. They were picking, or did they pick the very next pick?
Oh, so that's why the Chiefs.
And that's why, not to get carried away and on another subject, but
no, I like it.
Remember the secrecy of us in 2017. Oh, we didn't tell anyone in the building. Oh, we didn't, you know, share this information with anyone. There's a reason why you do that. Because if it leaks through the building, it is going to get out of the building. If people in the Saints draft room knew that they were likely to take Patrick Mahomes, I promise you it got out of the building. And there's probably a reason Kansas City went right ahead of them. And there's, you know, obviously we had a lot of ties into that building. From what I was told, you know, Drew Brees was told, you know, this is the plan and this is the successor. And they were locked and loaded, ready to pick him. And Kansas City did probably the smartest move in draft day history and got up in front of them and took them. And now they have arguably the best quarterback ever to play.
So I love stories like this. So because here's what's out there publicly. Sean Payton said that, so to your point, trying to keep it a secret, flew out to Lubbock to work out Patrick Mahomes and purposely returned to New Orleans like late at night, so under the cover of darkness, so nobody could see, you know, that he was at anywhere, or even left New Orleans. But But then the other thing that's out here that Patrick Mahomes actually said publicly on the Kelce podcast, which was he actually told the Chiefs that they needed to come up and trade for him because someone else was going to take him. But he said specifically 12, and obviously the Saints were at 11. So maybe there was some luck involved there too. And sometimes that happens, but obviously the Chiefs felt like they had to move up ASAP or they weren't going to get him.
Here you go. Here's another scenario that very likely could have happened. Sean flies out in the middle of the night, has this workout. Maybe no one in the building knew. Maybe Mickey and Sean and Drew were the only three people that knew, and they did. And Jeff Ireland maybe, you know, did they? Maybe they did a hell of a job. I'm not saying it got out of the building. I'm just saying if people know in the building, it's going out of the building.
Yeah.
You got all your young scouts, all your come uppers that are, you know, get tied in with the Schefters and the all these guys that are, you know, telling you they'll help you with your career, and you know, you just feed me some information. Trust me, it happens in every building. They're hunting for all the young guys that are coming up. So if it gets out in the building, it's getting out. If they did a great job of containing the information. One thing I would say, Ryan did a great job of that draft. We took the wrong guy, but we did a great job of containing the information. No one knew we were going to take a quarterback, you know, so we just picked the wrong guy. If you're the agent of Patrick Mahomes and Sean flies out at whatever to Lubbock and gives you a strong indication that we're going to take you at 11 or 12 or whatever we said that was.
At 11.
Yeah. Now I'm Chris Cabot. I'm the agent. Where do I want my player? Where is the path to greatest success and quickest to get on the field? And obviously both situations from a coaching standpoint were A+. You knew you were going to go to somewhere that is going to allow the quarterback to succeed. From a roster standpoint, I'm sure they broke it down, looked at the talent. But to me, the biggest factor would have been, is Drew really done? You know, how many more years is Drew going to play? Is this going to be a Aaron Rodgers, I sit for 3 years? Versus I'll beat out Alex Smith, you know, that could be in your head. So now you're telling, you know, Dorsey or, whoever was running that draft for Kansas City, Veach, you know, I know they were both on the staff. Yeah, I don't, you know, however it was working, maybe Andy Reid was running it. Now if you're Chris Cabot, you're saying, hey, if you want him, you have to go ahead of New Orleans. So there's so many different ways it works. It's fascinating. Agents can play a big role, and information getting out of buildings plays a big role.
All right. Well, let's talk about what the Bears have to do here. So after everything we just said, it's like, well, then why still do a top 10? Well, the reality is you still have to do your work every year and try to get it as right as possible, regardless of what history tells you about what the hit rate is. So that's obviously what the Bears and every other team are doing right now to get their draft board set up properly so they don't screw it up. And the Bears do have two top nine picks at this point. So with those two top nine picks, we want to lean on Josh for his expertise on, you know, the prospects that he likes here in the top 10. And like he said off the top, it's going to differ from the Bears, it's going to differ from every team. Everyone's got their own top 10. This is why after the first couple picks every year, and sometimes even within the first couple picks, things go haywire and not as expected because everyone's board looks differently. But we're going to talk about Josh's board here, and we'll start with your number one prospect, work our way up to 10, and then we'll even sprinkle in some others there in the back end that just missed. But let's go with number one.
Well, just so I can get this out there, you know, this is strictly based on tape. I don't have access to the character makeup of all these players, which is going to play a big role in where these guys are ultimately placed on the board. I'm going strictly based on tape. I'm not putting premium on a position. I'm looking at a guy and saying, in 3 or 4 years, can this guy be a top player at his position? This is my, you know, my personal favorite top 10. And trust me, this was not, you know, this was not easy. I literally started with 20 names of guys that I think are worthy of being in the top 10 of the draft. And even after that, I still have 9 other names of guys that I'm excited about if I were to take them at some point in the first round or early in the second round. So going back to my original point, this is a good draft. I'm confident as long as Caleb works out that the Bears are going to have 2 really good players. But we'll start with number 1. Marvin Harrison to me is the guy that has the chance to be the best player of this entire class. I think there's been – this happens in the business. The media tells you who the best player is. And remember Joel Klatt last year as a sophomore said, this guy's going to be the best receiver in the NFL within 4 or 5 years. Yeah. And I think what happens is no different than Caleb. You get put up on this pedestal, this mountain as the best guy. And then I think a lot of scouts start looking for ways to pick holes in him and weaknesses in him. And all of a sudden, you know, is he really that good? Dude, this dude is special. This dude is special. You know, there's 2 things about him that I would say if I wanted to critique him a little bit, you know, with his length and radius, you would like to see him extend a little bit more. He'll tend to let the ball come into his body a little bit, which will be a bigger deal on this level because there'll be more contested catches. And he needs to be better after the catch. He has the physical skill set to be a good run after the catch guy. He flashes it in college. I thought he played his junior year, preserving his body for the NFL. You know, he's not nearly as rugged and nasty after the catch as a guy we're going to talk about really soon. But you're talking the guy that's 6'3", that has feet and hips like a 5'11 guy. No one can cover him. He's great in contested situations. He's got a good feel and understanding for the game. He can, you know, he's an asset as a blocker in the run game. You can insert him in the box and use him to match up. And the most important thing a wide receiver can do. Here, my theory and philosophy is always this: most NFL teams can move the balls between the 20s. Once you get inside the red zone, you have to have guys that can score touchdowns. And there is no one in this draft class that can score touchdowns like this guy. He's a touchdown machine. He's open on every play because of his size and radius. He's got great ball skills. From what I've been told, his work ethic's outstanding. When they time him at Ohio State, he's 4.35 to 4.42. And I trust the source that came from. He really is a special player. And I think he's just scratching the surface. I think he's got more in the tank. He's already the best one, and he's got even another level he can climb to. So he's my favorite player in the draft, which brings us to number 2.
Yeah, I was going to say this. The reason I know that that you must really think Marvin Harrison Jr. is really, really good is because I also know how much you love this guy, because we've been exchanging messages and talking about him for months now. And you end up with him at number 2 and not number 1. So let's get to your top quarterback in the draft.
Caleb Williams, you know, probably much more variance than Marvin. His ceiling, if he hits it, will impact the league greater than Marvin will impact the league. He has a chance to completely rewrite the history of an organization, regardless of who takes him. but he has a floor that's lower than a lot of the guys because the nature of the position, all the things that go into it beyond the ability to play football, obviously where you play, how you handle the criticism, how you handle adversity, the talent around you, the coach calling the plays. Like, there's a lot of factors that go into quarterbacks that make their ceiling floor a lot different than, you know, say a wide receiver. You know, Caleb, to say the least, was disappointing, I thought, this past year because he tried to do too much. I thought the bowl game for USC was very telling when they put the backup guy in who just ran the offense, ran it crisply, wasn't trying to be a hero on every play, and they had one of their better offensive games. I think it's in Caleb to do it. You saw it the most his freshman year at Oklahoma, as far as playing on time, playing, you know, within the offense, and just if the first receiver in the progression's there, hit it. It's okay if it's a 5-yard gain. A lot of throws on first down are just breather plays. They're run plays. It's an extension of your run game. As these last 2 years went by, you see him consistently passing up wide open receivers, trying to hit a grand slam instead of just taking the single or the double. I think that can be coached out of him. I think he has. He'll have the awareness that you have to play that way. That was a concern for us with Patrick Mahomes coming out of Texas Tech. Clearly, he's been coached on how to play on time in the pocket, and when it's not there or if there's pressure, now you use those special skills to create and create explosive offense. And Caleb has really good feel in the pocket. He's got very, very good instincts as a passer and a runner. His throwing ability is outstanding. As far as just in the pocket, on his platform, he can 70 yards on a dime, and it's effortless. You know, running to his right, ball down at his hip, funny body throw, 25 yard downfield on a dime. Like, he's got special traits, special talent that separate him from the other three quarterbacks in this group. I don't know what's true and not true about who he is, what he's about, but I'll say this: as long as he's smart enough, he's a good teammate that the players respect. He doesn't have to be the ultimate best leader ever, especially with what they've already built around him. And winning Super Bowls is his number one priority, and it's not brand Caleb. I think that's what you're running into today with a lot of these guys, is they're creating brands of themselves, and that can get in the way of the ultimate team goal. You know, if he can stay away from those negative detractors, he can galvanize the locker room with the talent they have around him. I expect him to play well his first year. And then, you know, from year two on, you know, look out. Like, he can be a special, special player if he learns to play disciplined and stays healthy. A little concerned about the height. I mentioned the other day on a radio or a podcast that I was concerned about his hand size. I had it written down wrong. He's 9 3/4, which is plenty big, especially in these conditions. You know, if he learns to play disciplined football, he could be the most impactful, important player in this draft class, you know, 4 years from now.
Do you do player comps or ever? I know that's probably more of a media thing than.
No, that's player comps is, you know, obviously. The first thing we always do once we get a player's all of his testing done and his body measurements done, you know, we had a program where you just type his name in and it'll show you the 10 most comparable players physically. Yeah. So you have that comp, body type, speed, length, and then you have tape, obviously. He reminds you of Patrick Mahomes a little bit. He really does. Obviously, the style of offense plays into that. The tremendous arm talent and power. Patrick's instincts in the pocket, when to run, always knowing when to run, never getting sacked. And then Patrick's vision when he's on the move are what make him the as rare as rare gets, top quarterback in the league. Caleb, I think, has those some of those traits. We'll see how good they are when he gets to this level. But there is I buy into that comp.
Can I give you another one?
Yeah.
That I've it's more based off of just feeling when I'm watching the tape sometimes, but yep. It's Aaron Rodgers.
You know what? I'll be completely honest with you. I did not study Aaron Rodgers coming out of Cal.
Well, I'm even just going off more of like his NFL specifically. The areas where I see it are the times when, and you're right in that he doesn't always do it. And he did it more when, you know, he was at Oklahoma and probably early on at USC, but when he actually just throws on time and gets that ball out quick to what the play design is, the way he just sort of flicks it or hit those slants, like the Packers would always kill you on third down with Rodgers and Devontae Adams. Way he changes his arm angle to those sidearm throws on the bubbles or whatever to the outside. Like it's not all the time, but it's like some sort of blend there of what Mahomes does, but also the timing stuff with Rodgers. When Caleb actually does it, I see that.
Yeah, he's got incredible ball handling. You want your quarterback, especially when he's in the gun, to be to have the hands and coordination of a second baseman or a shortstop, you know, almost like turning a double play. Major issue with Justin Fields.
Yeah.
Major issue. It's unbelievable to me for a person who is as rare of an athlete at the position that the NFL has ever seen, with the exception of, you know, a handful of guys, that Justin couldn't get that tight, that he just didn't have it.
He played shortstop in high school.
Yeah, he's so slow and methodical with the ball. And that, you know, the people got very frustrated with the bubble screens last year. Obviously you're calling those bubble screens, you know, basically dictated on how heavy the box is and where you have advantages and yeah, why would you keep doing it? But part of the reason those were not consistently successful was the timing on a lot of those throws. And Justin, Coach Nagy's biggest concern on Justin after the first year was that ball handling, methodical nature he had. And Caleb's the complete opposite. He, like you said, Rodgers, Mahomes, these guys that can just like, it looks like they're holding a baseball and they can just flick it out. He can do it. I never would compare him to Rodgers just because I try to do college to college.
Got it. Yeah. You
know what I mean? I didn't watch Aaron Rodgers coming out of Cal.
The real quick, and we'll move on. Obviously, we're going to spend some good time on Caleb, though. But that's one of the things that's been out there that I've tried to fight against, because if you just look at the numbers, like time to throw, there's people that are picking on Caleb for, oh, it's the same thing with Justin. He holds on to the ball too long. And it's just, they're two completely different reasons, though. And you just did a good job of talking about all of it, because you're essentially saying Caleb's like choosing to do it because he's just looking for the home run and he's passing up open guys. It's not that he can't do it. What we learned about Justin through 3 years was it was seriously like a problem that he couldn't speed that up, and he had to see a guy open before he would actually pull the trigger. So even though the numbers might match up, to me, they're two completely different issues.
I would say you're exactly right. And I'd say the biggest difference is trust. Caleb has the athletic arrogance and trust that he can make any throw on the field. Justin Fields, so many times you see it, he's looking at it, he wants to throw it. It's almost like he didn't trust his own ability to get that ball out before the defender is going to contest it, and he never developed it. And If he's going to become a starting quarterback in the NFL again, he's going to have to fix that because he can't rely on his legs forever. It's trust. It's confidence and trust. And I for whatever reason, it just didn't get better with Justin. And it's hard because there was one game this year, two games this year where he had it. And I really thought he was taking off when he went Denver, Washington. Man, there were some throws. I remember the throw against Denver to DJ Moore where the left tackle didn't get the snap count. And it was a slant. And Justin just got the ball and fired it. He just trusted it. And the next week against Washington, he was outstanding, getting the ball off quick. Like left tackle was getting crushed. Borum was getting eaten alive by Chase Young. Justin was just getting it out because he trusted it. And then the very first play of Minnesota,
I think that was the moment that his Bears career ended.
I fell on the ground. I was like, empty. They're bringing an extra guy. You got a 5-man protection. It's the most basic, simple thing in football. He had two guys. He had blasting game, and he had DJ Moore in the flat, wide open, easy timing throw. Again, extension of the run game, get 4 yards on first down, and he takes a sack. Like, it just – I just fell to the floor, just like, oh, my God. He just went right back. And then the next two quarters of that game looked like the Justin that didn't trust himself.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And I think in the comparison to Caleb, that's exactly what I keep coming back to. What I love is when they run that, like that same exact play, think about that same exact play where it's just catch out, like just trust it, go get those 4 yards. He does it, but the ball's out before he even realized it got snapped sometimes. Like it's night and day difference between those two. All right, let's keep moving on. I'm excited about number three on your list because I had no idea you were going to have him this high, but I actually mocked him to the Bears in my Bears mock draft yesterday for CHGO at number nine, obviously, but you got him all the way up to number three. So tell us about this defensive tackle.
Byron Murphy Jr. is my favorite defensive player in this draft. I think Byron Murphy Jr. in 3 to 4 years will be a Pro Bowl or better all pro special player as an interior guy that can dominate the run and dominate the pass. So if I'm taking a D tackle in the top 10, obviously I want him to look like Akeem Hicks, Chris Jones, Simmons in Tennessee, Leonard Williams from USC. Usually they have a look to them, and they're 6'4", 6'5", long, powerful, athletic, bend, all that. But every once in a while, there's outliers. And obviously the best guy ever to play the position in the last 30 years was an absolute outlier. I'm not saying this guy's going to be that good, but I will say this. There's a lot of teams that regret not taking Aaron Donald and letting him sit that long because they thought they were worried about his, size and length. One thing I was taught in this business very early on, if you're at your position, be small, be special. This guy has special traits. To run 4.88 at 300 pounds, I think he was 297. He's got it's not like he's got like red flag traits everywhere. He's got big hands that he uses effectively. He's not ideal lengthwise, which will show up and it will get him. But that's to be understood when you're dealing with a guy of this stature. This dude, first and foremost, he's an ass kicker. He's an every down, all out, balls to the wall. And then on top of that, he's instinctive. He's aware. He feels blocking schemes very well. He's got outstanding leverage and power. He's outstanding in the run game. Down the center, he can hold the point of attack. And laterally, he can chase down guys better than most. And as a pass rusher, he can win. If you're going to be a really good interior pass rusher, you have to have power to go down the center of the chest of a guard or a center, and then you have to be able to win on edges. And this guy can do both. And for a guy that, you know, from his body style and his lack of length, wouldn't look like a guy that could traditionally win on edges, because he's got a little stiffness in his hips. He's got outstanding feet. He's got outstanding know-how, set up his rush. And once that guard knows that you can bull his ass back, now he's susceptible to any of the, you know, counters outside winning on the edge. He can do it. He does it consistently. He dominated every big game I watched him play in, other than maybe Washington. I would say wasn't a dominant game, but by no means it wasn't a bad game. He can play in any scheme. For the Bears, I think, you know, he'd be their starting three technique day one. And I think he's going to be a high end player and could be a piece that takes this good Bears defense to an outstanding defense. The reason why great three techniques are always on the best defenses and usually in the playoffs, three technique impacts the game on every single play. And you can only say that for a few positions. They're so valuable. If you've got one that's an ass kicker and he can wreck a game, he's going to make all 10 of the guys around him better. And he's going to make your defensive coordinator better. And he's going to make the city that he's playing for happy, because he's going to help generate wins.
So I agree with everything you said about the player there. My question is and this is not based on any inside information as much as it's just me following this new regime the last couple of years, where I wonder if they would actually draft him. Two reasons. And I'm curious, just your experience in the league, just your thoughts on it. One is, it seems like Matt Eberflus has a type, and he obviously coached DeForest Buckner. And then they go out and they draft Jervon Dexter last year, who is that sort of bigger, longer guy, but who his get off could not be more different than Byron Murphy's get off. The way Murphy explodes off the line, to my opinion, is Dexter's biggest weakness. And then the other part too is they drafted two defensive tackles last year. So my question to you is, just somebody who's been in those draft rooms all those years, how much does that matter that they used the draft capital they did on Dexter and Pickens a year ago?
You know, it definitely is going to play a part in it. They're going to want Jervon Dexter to be a starting three tech for them and be an impactful player. Obviously, you want that for your team, but it's a real thing. It's the guy you drafted. It's your pick, and you want him on the field. And as much as it sounds crazy that there's a guy available that can make your team better, and it just means Jervon's going to play less, I do think GMs will pass on the guy at times to make sure the guy they drafted in the previous draft is on the field and gets his run. To me, that's not the way to make decisions. You can't have enough interior defensive linemen. If you're talking about the four, oh, I don't even know who their fourth guy is right now, but Jervon, and then Zach, and then, you know, Billings.
Well, that was gonna, not to interrupt you, that was gonna be one of the reasons why I would think they might still take a swing at Murphy, because they have not replaced Justin Jones, who got a pretty good contract with the Arizona Cardinals.
Listen, Jervon Dexter, Billings, and Zach Pickens is not good enough. You know, unless Dexter takes this huge jump, right? Huge jump. But I don't see the instincts that are ever going to allow him to be a dominant player. Like, I think he's going to be a good player because he's so physically talented and he can literally just run through players. But blue players, Pro Bowl players, all have high-end instincts. And this guy has it all, other than, you know, people's concerned about his size. He don't play small a single down of the game. This, you feel this dude on every snap. He is powerful. He's got big hands. He can get into guys' chest and just toss them to the side. He's got amazing core strength. I'm not saying he's going to be Aaron Donald, but he's going to have Aaron Donald-ish type plays. 4'8" at that size, the way he plays, like, it's special. It's like he's got some special traits to compensate for the lack of length and the lack of height. The character makeup, from what I hear, is outstanding. That's another reason to put him up, to be comfortable drafting them. I'm probably the only person in the world that has him this high, but I think in 4 years, again, when we talk about who are the special players from this class, I think he's going to be one of them for sure.
All right. Love it. Let's go to number four now. This would be your number two wide receiver.
Yeah, we're going down to Neighbors. 6 foot, 192 pounds. So you'd probably say average height. He's just a baller. This guy is just a baller football player. I don't know that there's a big ceiling for him. I think what he is right now is what he's going to be. But he doesn't have any limitations right now. So you're looking at a guy that's going to come in, start day one. He can be your X number one receiver. He's explosive. You saw it with the 42-inch vert at his pro day. He can run. He has feel in his routes. He knows how to run routes and set guys up. He's got good awareness, in the middle of the field, against zone coverage. Contested catch, which is a huge factor when evaluating these players. He's outstanding, for a guy that's not as big and long as strong as some of the guys in this class. He's still really good contested catch guy, and he's the best of the guys we're going to talk about. Malachi Corley from Western Kentucky, to me, is the best run after catch guy in this class. But not even in the stratosphere of overall wide receiver of the first round receivers. When you're talking about run after catch, Neighbors is the best, and it's a significant drop to the next guy. We're seeing it all over the league. Get the ball out quick. Get the ball out to DJ. Let him make a play. Get the ball out to Neighbors. Let him make a play, because he's going to make a defender miss. He's going to run through arm tackles. I think he's explosive. I think he's competitive. I don't see any real glaring weaknesses with this player. I think he's going to be immediate impact player in year one.
All right, we'll keep it moving and talk about the guy who I know you've liked. I know you've liked him because I remember we talked about him back in the fall on one of our podcasts. I'm sorry. I jumped ahead to one of the offensive tackles. Before we get there, number five is Brock Bowers, the tight end from Georgia.
Yeah, we talked about him. He was one of my guys we talked about in the fall. I was happy with, when he showed up with his measurements. Obviously, size was the concern with this guy. But a 6'3", 243 pounds. He's got close to 10-inch hands. And he's just under 33-inch arm. So he's got some length to him that'll allow him to be functional in the blocking game. We've talked about this all the time. He's not a Y tight end. He is the Gerald Everett role of the tight end world. Majority of teams look at tight ends as, the Y and then the F or whatever you want to call it. Some teams don't. Some teams just blend them all together just based on their personnel, play to their personnel. This guy's your UF pass catching tight end, but he's functional in the blocking game. And that is imperative, because if the guy won't block, then it completely changes how a defense can match you personnel wise. They can go much lighter and they can just have lighter guys that can cover, and you're not worried about it. You know, that was a big issue. You know, we had with Jimmy Graham back in the day. You know, he wasn't a big fan of blocking at one point of his career, and it allows the, you know, the defense to match you a little bit differently. And so if you got a guy that'll at least give effort, get in the way, you know, sustain blocks on the backside, they're never going to ask him to be a point of attack, hand in the dirt, you know, ass kicker like they need Cole to be. But I think, you know, he showed that he's got enough size. He hasn't tested, but if you look back to his high school history, he went to the opening in Oregon, and he has verified testing numbers where at 215 pounds, he ran 4.55 and he jumped 40 inches. So you see the explosiveness on tape. He can be a true difference maker in the pass game. You put him and Keenan Allen in the middle of the field, and you got DJ Moore on the outside. Good luck defending that, especially when you got you know, a quarterback that's going to be able to extend plays and make plays, you know, off script if Caleb's the guy. Got hurt towards the end of the year, so you know, I think, you know, the Auburn game kind of was his peak, and then it kind of tailed off a little bit when he had the ankle. But catching radius, catch through contact, and again, more important than anything, his ability to run after the catch. He's outstanding. He's not a, you know, Pitts came out a couple years ago from Florida. Atlanta took him. Pitts was more, you know, more sudden with his feet in and out. This guy's more on the move in line than he is like short area agility. Not that he's bad. But you want to get this guy on the move. Like, you know, as they use him at Georgia, they give him on the reverses. Mm-hmm. You want this guy catching, you know, these crossers because he's fast and he's hard as hell to tackle. I think he's going to be super productive. And 3 or 4 years from now, I think we're going to be talking about no different than, you know, how impactful and how important the tight end in Detroit was this year as a rookie. There's no reason Brock can't do what Laporta did and even more because he's got more in his body.
All right. So then the next guy that I was about to jump ahead to before we talked about Bowers is your top offensive tackle, J.C. Latham from Alabama.
Yeah. Offensive line is interesting this year. You know, to be honest with you, you know, there's probably two tackles that come to mind that are probably safer picks. You know, Joe Alt just at left tackle, and the Oregon State kid at right tackle. You know, I can see teams just feeling more comfortable and safe with those players. This guy is rare as far as his traits. To be as big as he is, you know, he showed up at the combine 6'6", 342, 35-inch arms, 11-inch hands. He's sturdy, built to last. Why I love him so much and think and rank him higher than these other O-linemen is he has ultimate position flexibility. He can play any position on the offensive line. You know, I doubt you would ever play him at center, but I wouldn't put it past him that he could play it. He could play either guard. He could play either tackle. So as far as looking to the future, he gives you so much flexibility. He is, to me, the lighter you can get him, I would want him. The more tape I watched on him as it went on this year, here's a real thing with him that I know teams are concerned about. His awareness and his instincts and feel are not high end, you know, and it is a little bit concerning when you talk about moving him inside where the game moves a lot faster. So I think he's going to start out as a tackle where it's more, yeah, you're blocking the end. Obviously, it's more than that. There's a lot that goes into it playing tackle too, but it's a lot harder inside as a center or a guard if you lack awareness and instincts, because there's so much movement in there, with the defensive line. So I think you're going to start him out at tackle. He makes the game look so easy. One-on-one pass rush, he just stones guys. And as soon as he locks them up, it's over. Where he gets into issues is he can be a little late to recognize games. He can be a little, when they're doing twists and stunts, second level defenders. Oftentimes it's hard for me to know, did he mess that up? Did the back mess it up? But it comes up a lot. But as far as just raw, pure talent, we mentioned this guy earlier in the podcast. This is the closest thing to Carl Nix that I've seen since Carl Nix. You know, I remember the kid from Miami of Ohio came out, Bell that Philadelphia took. I believe he played for Philadelphia and was a really good player there. That rare body type to be 6'5 plus and look like this, not have any, not be fat and fleshy. It's just, he's special, and the way he can bend, like I said, you can play him at all four offensive line spots. I think he's going to go higher than a lot of these mocks have him, because I think people around the league inside buildings see that this guy is just different than any of the other offensive linemen in this class.
All right, moving on to now 7 and 8. I've been struggling with the pass rushers a little bit. It's an interesting year for them, and especially when it comes to the next two you have here. But we'll start with number 7, and you have Dallas Turner from Alabama, number 1 amongst your pass rushers.
Yeah, so he would be your more traditional 34 outside linebacker. I don't know how much that's going to play a role in their decision-making. Obviously, by the personnel moves the Bears have made, they are showing you they like bigger, heavier guys. So I look at this guy more as when we were there and the guys that we were looking for. I mentioned this, on a previous podcast. He could be even higher on the list if you saw it consistently. You wish you saw it more. But his special on tape is special. And these type of guys, even if they're a little bit inconsistent and a little bit of an underachiever in college as far as production, to me, they hit in the NFL and they become better pro players than college players. This guy's got get off. He's got length and bend. His explosiveness in a short area is outstanding. And what some teams are going to love about this guy is you can play him all over the field. You can match this guy in man coverage over a legit tight end. His movement to run 4.4 at that body size. I don't know the makeup. I don't know if there's something missing as far as like why he wasn't more productive. But this kid's talent is through the roof. He projects so well to the NFL. And I think in 3 or 4 years, you're going to be hearing this guy's name a lot. He's going to be a nightmare, to try to block for some tackles once he puts it all together as a pass rusher, cause he's going to get bigger. He can generate power. His inside spin move is as sudden and as quick as I've seen. And he's got that length and bend to win with the pure fastball. This guy is so talented, and that's why I ranked him number 7.
So number 8 now is Jared Verse, the defensive end from Florida State. So you have Turner over Verse for, all of the special aspects that Turner brings that you just mentioned. But I'm curious, do you think Verse is a better fit for the Bears?
I would not be surprised at all if Verse is above Turner on their board, because of the style of play and the size. Not that he was much heavier. I think Verse lightened up for the combine. to run the 40 that he ran.
Yeah, he was only 254, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And that's generally what happens is they get as slim as they can, lighten down, run a fast 40, and then show up at their pro day. They won't run a 40, and they'll be 262. Like, this dude's bigger than 254. You can clearly see it on tape. Love the length. To me, I've said it before, this guy's got Chicago Bear written all over him. Like, this is a guy, I think he's on the team. He's playing opposite of Montez Sweat. You're probably not as athletic as you want rushing the passer, but you got two complete football players because they're both ass kickers versus the run. They both can generate pressure. This guy, similar to the tackle from Texas, all out every play. You can't miss on guys like this. Like, at worst, you're hitting a double and he's a functional starter. Like, there's, I see a very high floor for this player. Maybe his ceiling's not as high as a guy like Turner, but he is an ass kicker. He's violent. He plays the game with passion. You saw it last year. They take in the second round, they take Tyreek from
Stevenson,
Stevenson from Miami. You saw what that demeanor did for the secondary. It changed it. You put a dog out there that will play his ass off and hit anything. It is contagious and it spreads and it multiplies. Jalen tackled last year. Now, part of that obviously is because Jalen needs to get paid and he got paid. Part of it is you're going to get shamed in the DB room if your two safeties are whacking guys and now this new rookie corner is whacking guys and you're the only one out there. The Kyler Gordon, he'll hit your ass. Like, it's contagious. So you brought in Sweat. You saw what that did in a short amount of time. You bring in another dog that is all about football and plays his ass off. Like, it turns good defenses into great defenses. I can't say it enough. This team right now, as it's presently constructed, has one pass rusher on the entire roster. There's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of hope for the Bears next year, and I think it's warranted. I think this new regime is doing an outstanding job of building both sides of the ball up really well. But you cannot win in this league deep into the playoffs. You can't beat good quarterbacks if you don't have pass rushers. And if you really look at the back half of the season where everyone was getting excited, the end of the day, they still struggled against the better quarterbacks. You know, the quarterbacks that they played last year, which was the worst list of quarterbacks they're ever going to get. They'll never get an easier schedule as far as the quarterbacks they played last year. The decent ones all chewed them up because they couldn't rush the passer consistently. Like, that's a real thing. And they have one guy right now that's proven. You hope Jervon takes the next step, but they need to add still two or three guys because you need waves of them. When we were the best defense in the league in 18, we had Leonard and Khalil on the outside. We had Akeem on the inside. So we had three guys that could consistently apply pressure. And then we had a rotation of Roy Robertson Harris, Bilal Nichols, and Eddie Goldman in the middle, all who could apply pressure. Not that they were all great sack guys, but they could be disruptive. And then even Aaron Lynch was a guy that you know, when we had to spell the two outside guys that could go in there and get some pressure. You got to have waves of them. And if you look around the league and you look around the top teams and what they're doing, they're stacking pass rushers. So it's again, going back to what you said earlier, it's why I think only two receivers are going to go, because people are going to take these pass rushers.
Yeah, and going back to that draft class we were looking at earlier, pass rusher, pass rusher, pass rusher, pass rusher. So
that's not unique to that.
Right. Draft class. And so it might be smart if this is going to be a year where a pass rusher falls to number nine. It might be smart to grab them there. So we'll see.
It's a rare year. You're going to have four quarterbacks and at least two receivers. So they're going to be staring at a top two, three defensive guy on their board at pick nine. That doesn't happen very often, and they're gonna have that luxury this year.
Like I would be shocked if one of two, if not both, of Byron Murphy and Jared Verse were right there for him at number nine on the board. They might even be able to trade back in the spot and still get one of those two guys. So
we're gonna talk about that after we get to the 10th guy.
All right, let's get to number 9 and 10, knock these out. We go to number 9, another defensive player, and to the defensive backfield with Terrion Arnold.
Yeah, this guy's the best. To me, he's the best football player of the DB class this year. I think Toledo, Quinyon Mitchell has better traits, has a little more upside. This guy, to me, is the best football player. And what I love about this player is he can easily play any position in the defensive backfield. Was recruited as a safety, moved a corner. This year he showed you against high-level receivers, the LSU game, playing neighbors in the slot, playing neighbors on the outside. He's got outstanding movement. For a bigger, corner, playing off, playing press, good awareness and instincts. He's not a glass eater like Tyreek is, but he'll tackle. On-ball production is real. He's very good at the catch point, contesting, breaking up catches. His ball production the last 2 years has been outstanding as far as PBUs and picks. I came into the tape watching Kool-Aid, thinking Kool-Aid was the best corner on that team. And by the end of the year, getting to watch a big sample size of their tape, this dude can play. And he's going to make somebody very happy. And the defensive coordinator is going to love that he's not going to be pigeonholed into just being an outside guy. If you've got two good outside guys right now, play him at nickel. If you got one outside guy in a nickel right now, play him outside. He can play safety. You can just tell he's got a football brain. He's a hell of a player. I was really, really impressed with Terrion. And I know he didn't test out the, off the charts. He's a much better football player than he is a tester. And whoever takes this guy, in 3 or 4 years, this guy's going to be a really, really good football player in this league.
All right, and then we're going to wrap it up with number 10 on this list. And actually, this is a guy that a few weeks ago you told me to watch more of. And the more I did, the more I started to really enjoy Adonai Mitchell, the wide receiver out of Texas, who, while his teammate Xavier Worthy got all the headlines with that 40 he ran, that 4.21, A.D. Mitchell still ran a 4.35. So he's still pretty damn fast, and he's a lot bigger. And you got him at number 10.
I honestly feel he's the second most talented receiver in the draft. His upside is bigger and higher than neighbors.
Wow.
This guy has a lot of untapped potential. This guy played high-level college football for 3 years against high-level corners, which is something you can't say about a lot of the West Coast guys. And there is no one who can cover this guy. He understands already pace, how to change pace and routes. He can drop his weight. He is a legit vertical threat on the outside. He stacks guys easily, tracks the ball well. He's got good ball skills. There's a lot of teams that have concerns about his makeup, and that is absolutely why you're seeing him way lower on mock drafts, because from a talent standpoint, this guy's got special ability. He is uber talented. Fun fact, talked about it before the show. This guy played 2 years at Georgia, 1 year at Texas. He played in 5 playoff games. He scored a touchdown in every one of those games. As a sophomore, he missed a majority of his season, comes back for the playoffs, catches the very first pass of the game against Ohio State, and he catches the last pass of the game against Ohio State, beating Denzel Ward for a touchdown in the back end of the end zone. Denzel Ward will be a first-round pick next year when he comes out. No one can cover this guy. He destroyed the Alabama corners. When he wants to go, which is an issue that you see on tape, he tends to not want to go all the time. I know some things personally that I see why teams are concerned. I'm not going to get into it. But I also know this, between the lines, he learns and understands football at a very high level. He's very competitive. Someone's going to be able to balance out some of these things that teams are concerned about. It's not something that's fatal. Someone's going to get this guy in the middle to lay the first round, and I won't be shocked at all if he ends up being the second best receiver in this class when it's all said and done. He is so talented. He's fun to watch. That group they had this year was really special with him and Worthy. And I think this guy, just from a pure talent standpoint and where he's going, that's why he made the top 10 for me.
So we're low on time, but there's definitely some other names I know you wanted to hit on that just missed this list. And I'm going to ask about one in particular because I know it's a Bears fan favorite who did not make this list. And that's Rome Odunze, who might be the most popular mock draft pick to the Bears at number 9 at this point. So where are you at on Rome?
He literally would be 11. You know, I have 10 guys I feel strong about. I'll just roll through them real quick, then we'll talk about Rome. You know, Rome, Jaden Daniels, Quinyon Mitchell, Toledo, Joe Alt, Notre Dame, Latu from UCLA. I came off him a little bit. Obviously, the medical concerns. I thought he was a bigger player. Mm-hmm. And at the size that he is, that upright playing style concerns me a lot more, because you can get away with it if you have pure power and can dominate with power. But at his size, he's going to have to continue to play that slippery game, and he doesn't have great length. So, you know, that's why I came down on Latu a little bit. Still think he's a fantastic football player. I love Worthy from Texas. People are comparing him to John Ross are crazy. Not even this dude is a football player and can play, and he's going to be a baller in this league. I love Worthy. Mims from Georgia, the tackle. I don't get it. I don't know the background. Something must be off, because 6.072, 3.40, ran 5.07, and when you watch the tape, he moves like he's 300 pounds. Something's off, but if somebody gets his character right and he ends up being the best tackle in this draft, I won't be surprised. I really like the Oregon State tackle. I really like Darius Robinson from Missouri. And then my 10th guy that I considered, this would be the 20th guy, was J.J. McCarthy. So those would be the top 20. Going back to Odunze, just don't think he has the upside of Adonai Mitchell. I get why he's going to get drafted before him. Cleaner character, outstanding player, you know. Of all these top guys, I don't think he runs as well as Harrison, Neighbors, and Mitchell. He runs well enough. He has fantastic ball skills. I don't love the if we're just talking Chicago specifically, to me, him and DJ are both one X receivers. Not that you couldn't make it work. It would still work. He would play the Z, but he's not a true burner. He's an outstanding catch through contact ball skill guy. I love the late hands on the fades. He's a good player, rarely matched up against good defenders. And here's why my biggest concern with him. When you really watch him play against good DBs, when you watch the USC corner who just transferred to Alabama, who I don't even know is going to be a top guy, but he's big and long and physical, like he gave him a lot of issues. And he's going to see that a lot more on this level. And I think you're going to see a guy that struggles to win one-on-one on the outside more than the three receivers I ranked ahead of him. Mm-hmm. I get why he's going to go, like I said, ahead of Adonai. If they take him at nine, I would be very excited for the organization. So just because he didn't make my personal top 10 list, I get it. He's good. I just don't think he's as special of a talent as the three guys I ranked ahead of him at his position.
Makes sense. And also sounds like the Bears would be one of the better places maybe for him to end up, because with DJ Moore and Keenan Allen out there, maybe he doesn't have to face those top corners right away as a rookie.
To me, when you're building it now, the huge caveat in all this is how long is Keenan going to be here?
Well, it might just be a year. Yeah.
Yeah. If you knew Keenan's going to be here for 3 years with this rookie quarterback and you got DJ, to me, that next component is as close as you can get to a true speed guy. If you put Worthy on this team, like that talent group that Caleb would have to work with. So you're talking about a situation now where I just named 10 guys that I'm still super excited about. Like you could trade back at nine and who knows who they end up with. But if you put Worthy and DJ, Keenan, Cole and Gerald and Swift are all on the field and 11, well, obviously one of the tight ends, likely it'd be Gerald if it's like a passing situation, but even if it's Cole, good luck, because when Worthy's on the field, he is going to expand the defense. The safeties are going to they're going to have to back the F up, and you got one of the best to ever do it on the inside with Keenan Allen. Like, and then you got DJ Moore on the other side. That to me would be prolific. Or you could add a bigger body, like a T. Higgins type guy. So in this year's draft, like Keon Coleman,
yeah,
could be a possible situation. You know, if they were to move back, I don't love having two receivers that don't run very well. I'd much rather go with the speed guy. But the 10 names I just listed, starting with Rome, it just shows you they're like, I mean, Jaden Daniels to me, tape pops off. The Toledo corner is going to be an outstanding player. I love Worthy. Like I said, the guy I'm really high on, most others aren't, is the, I shouldn't say they aren't. They just don't have as high. That Missouri pass rusher is an ass kicker.
Yeah.
If you traded back and ended up with him and more picks to bolster your roster, at the end of the day, I don't know how much difference there's going to be from Verse to Darius Robinson from Missouri, because they play a very similar style of game. It's a power kick your ass type game. Verse is just, you know, a better athlete at this point, but they're both really good players. And you know, Adam, to be honest with you, like, I still have 10 other names of guys. You know, if you go Drake May, Troy Fontenot from Washington,
I really like,
there's some things that bother me about Brian Thomas as far as his competitiveness, but he's got like that Adonai Mitchell upside, crazy traits. Love the center from Oregon, Jackson Powers, The pass rusher from Penn State, sign me up, Chop Robinson. Tackle at Oklahoma, Guyton. I would love to have him on my team. I like Kool-Aid. You know, I think
I do too. Yeah.
I think when Kool-Aid gets in the league, he's going to be just fine. Keon Colin, Ladd McConkey, both receivers I'd be excited to add to the roster. And the final guy I had on my list, I'm not as high on him as a lot of people, but obviously I would still like to have him as the Penn State tackle. He reminds me from a body movement standpoint of a Fetty a little bit, and that's what scares me. I do think the Penn State guy has much better instincts and awareness than a Fetty, which is what really got a Fetty. So it's deep. You can move back and still be confident you're going to get a really good pick if they want to, you know, have more than four draft picks, you know, for the entirety of the draft.
That's Olu Fashanu you're talking about from Penn State, the offensive tackle. You know who he played with in high school?
Oh, yeah. Kelly Williams.
Yes. Sorry.
I didn't want to try to say his name. So I was
it's all good.
It's kind of like that Auburn corner that went before Jalen Johnson.
Yeah, that one I couldn't figure out, but Olu I got. I could do Olu Fashanu. Josh,
good.
Thanks so much, man. Is there anything else you want to sneak in here? I think we hit on everything, though. It's a long pod, but it's a good one.
It's not a good D-tackle draft. You know, there's the Illinois kid, to me, is risky, especially with the dreaded fifth metatarsal. Mm. Bears doctors, no bueno. That injury reoccurs a lot. Plus, I think he plays a big man's game in a little man's body. Sleeper D-tackle that I think is going to end up going, you know, in the first three rounds for sure, probably first two, that I think might really surprise some people is Mike Hall from Ohio State. Mm. He's got, you know, he showed up at his pro day at 299. He's got some unique stuff to him as well. You know, that's another guy that's interesting. And the only receiver that I didn't talk about that I think is pretty unique is the North Carolina kid. Probably more of a second, third round developmental kid, but as far as vertical threat that can track the ball, very special. Probably the one guy that I've seen on a lot of mock drafts in the first two rounds that I just don't see at all is Roman Wilson from Michigan. I think he's a dime a dozen, you know, average player that if he was at any other school, you know, there wouldn't be much hype about him. No play strength, no run after the catch. He's just kind of a savvy little slot that usually you can find late in the draft, even as a college free agent. Other than that, you know, it's going to be a good day for the Bears because there is plenty of talent to pick from.
Well, we can't wait. We're only a few weeks away, and this was all really, really good insight. So we appreciate it, Josh. Thanks so much. Adam Johns will be back next week, and we'll probably, I'm assuming, we'll be back to our regular schedule of two pods the next few weeks leading up to the draft as we continue to cover it all. Make sure you're following us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, at Adam Johns, and the show account at Hogue and Johns as well. All the merch is up at HogueandJohns.com. Hope everybody has a great weekend. Josh, thanks again. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We'll talk to everyone else next week.
Nothing's off the table. Nothing is on the table right now.